and this is The Vinyl Cafe. I live downtown, right in the heart of the beast. But because the city where I live is a city of downtown neighborhoods, I can live a stone's throw from the rumble of the subway and still, when I walk my dog at night, thread my way under the graceful boughs of endless silver and Norway maples. I like living downtown. I have no idea what I may be missing, having never lived in the suburbs. I've always been afraid of the commute, afraid that I'd end up like one of those people you hear about who get caught in one too many traffic jams, and one Thursday afternoon they snap, step calmly out of their car in the middle of the freeway, toss their keys into the ditch, and walk away and are never heard of again. Aside from my apprehension about traffic jams, I have no quarrel with suburban living. Even though the idea of the suburbs began in the United States, began when urban architect Frederick Law Olmsted became suspicious of downtown neighborhoods like mine and went in search of what he called a holy green environment, neighborhoods which he believed would be better for the health of the family. Olmsted's idea was to create housing developments with the look of a park. And thus was born the front lawn and the notion that if a family really believed in community service, they would, above all, keep up their lawn. At the heart of Olmsted's philosophy was his belief that landscape has an effect on the unconscious process, and his assumption that the best effect is achieved by a gently rolling landscape of green. It was an assumption that made so much intuitive good sense that no one thought to question it, or no one where I grew up or lived ever questioned it. So pretty soon everyone had a front lawn, and pretty soon the competitive spirit raised its head, and the quest for the perfect lawn became so obsessive that grass was whacked and sprayed and rolled so incessantly that it lost any connection with holiness, and lawns began to look worryingly more like living room rugs than any holy thing. I can mark exactly where and when the rebellion began in my neighborhood. The Dunker family down the street, Europeans, plowed up their front yard and let it lie fallow for a season. They wanted to see what would come if they let nature take its course. What came was goldenrod, of course, and Queen Anne's lace, and blue chicory, and buttercup, and dandelions, and bunches of other wild and native plants, and eventually, could you have guessed, what came were the weed police, who told the Dunkers they couldn't do what they were doing. They had to have a front lawn. That was 10 years ago. Now, I'm telling you this today because one night this week, out with a dog, I suddenly realized the Dunkers were, like most rebels, just slightly ahead of their time. The seller of lightning rods, as Ray Bradbury told us, always arrives just before the storm. Over the last decade, there's been a slow but steady shift in the front yards that I walk by. Flower beds have been creeping over their borders and overflowing their boundaries and spilling out over the grass. And one night last week, as I wandered along a street I favor for late-night walks, I realized that there are no longer lawns in front of a good 50% of the houses I was passing. And I realized, the way you realize things that have been dangling in front of your face for ever so long, that all through my neighborhood, lawns have been shrinking to the point of disappearing, as if they had fallen under the control of some character from a novel by Roald Dahl. I realized that in my neighborhood, grass has had its day. One of my favorite yards is completely void of any grass whatsoever. Instead of a lawn, this yard is crammed to overflowing with a patch of shoulder-high coneflowers. It looks like a field of black-eyed Susans on steroids. So glorious that you feel like you're walking by a field of corn every time you pass. It's only a small yard, but the flowers are so tall and the yard so full of them that you get the feeling if you stepped off the sidewalk and in among them, as I'm tempted to do each night, that you could disappear and push your way through them for hours before you found your way out. These, of course, are among the best days for walking by such gardening exuberance, because all the stuff in these teeming gardens is slowly embracing autumnal colors, the regal golds and purples that give a rich sense of natural risk to the street, a sense that lawns can never offer. I don't want to give the impression that I hate grass, but I like the new way of growing it more than the old. There's a woman who lives not far from me who's still growing grass, but she's doing it with reckless abandon. She has a yard of grass, but it isn't Kentucky bluegrass, and it isn't cut as short as a toothbrush. The grass in her yard is exuberant grass, as tall as the grass on the prairie before the white man arrived. These days, it's 7 feet tall, with sprays of russet and pink flower heads, which will, over the next few weeks, bleach out into bits of straw and eventually be smashed to the ground by the November rains. Another reminder of the rhythms of nature. It's very beautiful. If you walk by her house when there's a breeze blowing, her lawn rustles like tree leaves. Or if you pass in the late afternoon and it's backlit by the sun, you can see her grass arching up, the seed heads spraying out like a fountain. The effect is gorgeous. Although I'm sure there are some people who walk by her yard and consider it a mess.